ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
Old eyes cannot read.
Hari Nishto Pinargunya
Hari Nishto Pinargunya
Uttama Sloka Lilaya
Uttama Sloka Lilaya
Grihita Chita Jajarshe Akhyanam yad adhitavan parinishthitopi nargunya uttama shloka lilaya Grihita Cheta Rajarshe Akhyanam Yad Adhitavan Parinishthitopi Nargunya Uttama Shloka Lilaya Grihita Cheta Rajarshe Akhyanam Yad Adhitavan
Parinishthita,
fully realized.
Api,
in spite of.
Nargunye,
in transcendence.
Uttama,
enlightened.
Shloka,
verse.
Lilaya,
by the pastimes.
Grihita,
being attracted.
Cheta,
attention.
Rajarshe,
O saintly king.
Akhyanam,
delineation.
Yat,
that.
Aditavan.
I have studied.
O saintly king, I was certainly situated perfectly in transcendence, yet I was still attracted by the delineation of the pastimes of the Lord, who is described by enlightened verses. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. The absolute truth is realized as the impersonal Brahman at the first instance by philosophical speculation, and later as the super soul by the further progress of transcendental knowledge. But if, by the grace of the Lord, an impersonalist is enlightened by the superior statements of Srimad Bhagavatam, he is also converted into a transcendental devotee of the personality of Godhead. With a poor fund of knowledge, we cannot adjust to the idea of the personality of the absolute truth, and the personal activities of the Lord are deplored by the less intelligent impersonalists. But reasons and arguments, together with the transcendental process of approaching the absolute truth, help even the staunch impersonalist to become attracted by the personal activities of the Lord. A person like Shukadeva Goswami cannot be attracted by any mundane activity, but when such a devotee is convinced by a superior method, he is certainly attracted by the transcendental activities of the Lord. The Lord is transcendental, as are His activities. He is neither inactive nor impersonal.
Om Agyantimidandasya Jnananjana Chalakaya Chakshurum Militam Jena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Yudha Padakamalam Sri Guru Vaishnavamscha Sri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunathanvitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Sri Vishakan Vitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostate Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vansha Kalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patithanam Bhavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda
Hare Krishna Hare Krishna Krishna Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Hari Bol. I am greatly honored and grateful to be among all of you today, especially in the presence of my esteemed god brothers, Kalakanta Prabhu, Ambarish Prabhu, Brahmatirtha Prabhu, Balabhasain Prabhu. Any others? It is such a joy to see Kalakanta Prabhu expressing his dedication and his love for Srila Prabhupada and Lord Krishna in such an extraordinary way here in Gainesville. Could everyone hear me? Hari Bol. I'll say it again now that the volume is on. Such a joy to see His Grace Kalakanta Prabhu expressing his love for Prabhupada and Krishna in such an extraordinary way in Gainesville. I quickly memorized what I said the first time. Because when we asked Srila Prabhupada, what can we do to reciprocate with all that you've done for us? Srila Prabhupada would often say, just accept what I'm giving you and share it with others. That is the basis of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teachings. Whoever we are, wherever we are, when Lord Chaitanya was at Kurukshetra, the Kurma Brahmin wanted to leave home, take sannyas practically, and follow Lord Chaitanya. And Lord Chaitanya said, you just can stay home, carry on with what you're doing, but just accept what I'm giving you. Chant the holy name, study Srimad Bhagavad Gita, live by these principles, and share this message with others. By our words, by our example. Because the more we taste Krishna, the more we want to share Krishna with everyone and anyone. Because Krishna is all attractive. This is a test if we're actually tasting Krishna consciousness, that we spontaneously want to give this joy to others. In this material world where there's so much suffering and complexities, Krishna descends to give shelter. And in this age of Kali, he especially appears in his holy name, in the hearts of his devotees, in the deity, and in the Srimad Bhagavatam. So today we are discussing Srimad Bhagavatam. In today's verse, it's just the beginning of Shukadeva Goswami's lessons to Maharaj Parikshit. We read in the previous canto how the sages of Naimasharanya were gathered together in great compassion. They were liberated souls. They were living in a very sattvic forest, very peaceful, beautiful place. Have any of you been to Naimasharanya? Please raise your hand. It's a fantastic place. There's a beautiful river that flows there. Even today, 5,000 years later, where practically every holy place in India has become a shopping center. (Laughter) Naimisharanya is kind of like that, but still, it's beautiful forest, magnificent, huge, wide trees, nice river flowing. There's ancient banyan trees that are just gigantic. One, it is said that Vedavyas lived for some time and wrote Vedas. But can you imagine what Naimisharanya was like just at the dawn of Kali Yuga? So these sages were living there very peacefully, among themselves. No commercialism, no materialistic people. It was just sages living together. But they were not content with their own salvation. Because as you taste the sweetness of Krishna, you want to share Krishna with others. Paradukaduki. One's own, another person's suffering becomes one's own, and another person's happiness becomes one's own. So they wanted to perform a yajna to counteract the effects that were coming in Kali Yuga of quarrel and hypocrisy and spiritual laziness and greed and arrogance. They wanted to do something very powerful and substantial for the world. They all selected Suta Goswami to speak Srimad Bhagavatam to them. Because Suta Goswami had heard this narration from Shukadev Goswami. And he's now explaining the story of how King Parikshit, for a slight mistake that he made, he was cursed to die in 7 days. And he was the king of the world. He was a very highly realized person. He was the grandson of Arjuna. Now he could have taken his militaries to punish the son of that Brahmin, Sringi, with his own yogic powers. He could have counteracted that curse. He could have done so many things. After all, he was the ruler of the world with great yogic powers. But he chose to accept it as Krishna's mercy and leave home to fast till death on the bank of the Ganga. He had a grateful heart. He saw the loving hand of God even in the most traumatic situation in life. And in doing so, he taught us that whatever situation comes upon us, we always have the choice to see it as a curse, or even in the most difficult thing, to see a blessing behind the scenes. And according to what we look for, that's what we get. If we look for the curse, we get cursed. If we look for the blessing, yayatamam prapadyante tamstataiva pajamyaham, then Krishna will reveal the blessing. Now what kind of blessing is this? You're at the prime of your youth and you're cursed to die in 7 days for a slight mistake. But he saw Krishna and he was happy. Yes, let me spend these next 7 days hearing about Krishna. So when he, because his sincerity and his sense of urgency was so genuine and deep, when he arrived at the bank of the Ganga, sages, yogis, saints came from all over the world and all over the universe to be with him. This was really historical. The grandson of Arjuna, the king of the world, who's fasting till death at the bank of the Ganges. Everyone wanted to be there for this. Mostly because they were so moved by his devotion of how he responded to this crisis, they all wanted to give him support. And King Parikshit asked two questions. What is the prime duty for every human being? There are many scriptures that explain so many rules and regulations and rituals and philosophical explanations. But when you only have 7 days to live, you don't have time to go through all that stuff. He wanted to go right to the essence. What is the essence of all these scriptures? What is the prime duty for every human being to perform in all circumstances of life? Because this world, it is constructed in a certain way where dualities are inevitable. Success, failure, honor, dishonor, pleasure, pain, happiness, distress, victory, defeat, health, disease, birth, death, peace, war. As long as we're in material existence, whatever we do, whether we're saints or whether we're criminals, the dualities are always going to be there. Parikshit Maharaj asks, in every possible circumstance that comes upon a person, what is the prime duty? Not just with the prime duty when we're in the temple. The prime duty in every circumstance, what are we supposed to do? And his second question, what is the specific duty of a person who is about to die? And Srila Prabhupada explains, of the two questions, the second one is most relevant to everyone. Because every living being in Brahma's creation is about to die. Maybe in 100 years, maybe in 100 seconds. Nobody knows. Padam padam yadvi padam natesham. There's danger at every step. We read about it, we see it. This was Yudhisthira Maharaja's answer to the Yaksha's question. What is the most extraordinary thing in this world? And Yudhisthira Maharaj said, people see death all around them, but nobody thinks it's going to happen to me. At least soon. But we read about earthquakes and tsunamis, and we read about different crazy people who are gaining access to nuclear bombs, and we're reading about all kinds of people getting cancer and AIDS and all sorts of other diseases. And we're reading about the solar ice caps melting away. And tens and thousands, hundreds and thousands, millions of people are dying all the time. Most don't expect it. But complacency is there. So Srila Prabhupada emphasizes, what is the duty of a man about to die, or a woman? So they were all discussing with each other, and there were different schools of thought among those sages. So they couldn't come to an agreement of what really is the answers to Parikshit Maharaj's question. They were having a very friendly, respectful discussion. It's not that they were, you know, attacking each other. They were just, you know, which, you have your idea, I have my idea, he has his idea. Which one are we going to present to the king? You know, there's only 7 days and the seconds are ticking off every moment and we have to come to a conclusion. And just at that point, Shukadev Goswami entered into the assembly. He was only 16 years old. He's the son of Vyasadeva, very effulgent. And as soon as he came in, all arguments ceased. Everyone unanimously agreed he is the one to speak. They put him on the seat of honor. And Parikshit Maharaj approached him, bowed his head, surrendered his heart. And not as a matter of curiosity, not for the sake of academic study, but with a real necessity of the heart, the core of the heart, he asked these two questions to Shukadev Goswami. What is the prime duty for every human being in all circumstances of life? And what is the specific duty of a person about to die? Sukadev Goswami, in this chapter that we are reading today, is beginning his answer. His answer will be in 12 cantos, 18,000 verses. In essence, he's already given the answer. And practically the rest of the Bhagavatam is an explanation of that. Would you like to hear it? Tasmad Bharata Sarvatma Bhagavan Ishvaro Hari Srotavyas Kirtitavyas Chasmaratavyas Chechatabhayam. O descendant of King Bharat, one who desires to be free from all miseries must hear about, glorify, and also remember the personality of Godhead, who is the Supersoul, the Controller, and the Savior from all miseries. The highest perfection of human life, achieved either by complete knowledge of matter and spirit, by practice of mystic powers, or by perfect discharge of occupational duty, is to remember the personality of Godhead at the end of life. And Shukadev Goswami is going to speak about 18,000 verses as purports to that verse. To always remember Krishna, to never forget Krishna. All the teachings of all the scriptures in all the world are meant to ultimately just bring us to that. And Shukadev Goswami, he makes everything very personal. He tells his own story right at the beginning of how he came to this conclusion. It's quite a remarkable story. Would you like to hear? You already know it, but still, whenever we hear it again, Lakshmi Moni Devi Harivo. Hari Hari. Now I feel the blessings are multiplying in this room like anything. So, Shukadev Goswami, it's told in the Srimad Bhagavatam, he was the son of Vyasadeva, who was a Shaktivesh avatar, Krishna who descended on the earth to compile the Vedic literatures, in great compassion for all beings, for all times. And he had a son. And that child was Brahman realized. He had realized, Aham Brahmasmi, I am not this body, I am the eternal soul. He had realized the all-pervading, impersonal, supreme absolute. And his connection to that. Therefore, he had no desires. Brahma Bhuta Prasanatmana Sochati Nakankshati. He hankered for nothing, he lamented for nothing. He had realized the Sat aspect of the Lord, the ever-existing, eternal, all-pervading. And therefore he was Shanti. He was completely peaceful in the womb of his mother. So there was no need for him to do anything. And not only that, he understood that in this world there's so much greed and there's so much envy and so much passion. He didn't want to see it. He didn't want to be subjected to it. He was happy just to stay in the womb of his mother, because there's absolutely nothing going on there. Yes. And he was content in himself. He didn't need to do all things to keep his mind occupied because of boredom. He was totally absorbed in Brahman. He was just electrified with spiritual energy while in the womb of his mother. So he wouldn't come out. He had no desire to see this world. Abrama bhuvanalaka punar avatanarjuna. Krishna says from the highest planet in this world to the lowest, its places of birth and death, its people were place where people have to struggle, whoever you are. Now this raised some problems for his mother, especially 12 years later. He was in the womb of his mother for 12 years. And he was growing. It's not that he became like an impersonal Brahman in the womb. His body was growing and growing and growing. He was a 12-year-old child in the womb of his mother, and he refused to come out. So, Vedavyas was very... He wanted to have a son. This was his only son, as far as we know. So he went to Krishna, who was then living in Dwarka. And Krishna actually came. And Vedavyas was explaining Srimad Bhagavatam. And when Shukadeva Goswami heard it, he was so attracted by the pastimes of Krishna that he came out. He was born a 12-year-old boy. And then he just walked away. That's quite traumatic for a parent. And the mother was, what am I going to do? He just walked away. And the father chased after him. Son, come home, come home. And he kept walking. He just ignored his father. And the Bhagavatam describes there was one place where there's some young ladies who were bathing in a lake and they had no clothes on, and Shukadeva Goswami just walked by them and they just kept bathing. They didn't pay any attention. And then Vyasadeva, who was an elderly saint, he came by and they all became very disturbed and put on their clothes. And he asked, why are you so disturbed with me? I'm old enough to be your grandfather and my son is your age and you didn't mind him. They said, because we women, we know what's in men's minds. And your son, he doesn't know the difference between male and female anything. He doesn't see dualities. He's totally in Brahman. But you are also perfectly self-realized, but because you're a grihastha, you have to make discriminations. So Shukadeva Goswami just left. And Vyas couldn't bring him back. So Vyas made a plan, because he knew the power of Krishna's, of hearing about Krishna's beautiful pastimes. So he had one of his disciples, I think he was cutting wood or something in the forest, and he was singing the Srimad Bhagavatam about Krishna's beauty and Krishna's love and Krishna's qualities and Krishna's mercy. And when Shukadeva Goswami heard that, he said, I want to hear more. He said, well, come back to my guru, who was Vyasadeva. So Shukadeva Goswami then studied Srimad Bhagavatam with Vyasadeva. Atmaramas, there's a beautiful verse in Gita, in Bhagavatam, that Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would often cite, which describes even perfectly self-realized people who have attained mukti, liberation, they are attracted to hearing and chanting about the pastimes and glories of Krishna. And in the Srimad Bhagavatam itself, Badanti tat tat pavidas tatvam yajkenam advayam brahmeti paramatmeti bhagavan iti shabjate atmaramashchamuniyo. That the one God, that is declared in all great religions of the world, that there is one God, but that one absolute truth eternally has three features. Brahman, the all-pervading, formless, apparently impersonal light. The Paramatma, the Lord who is seated as the witness within the heart of every living being. And Bhagavan, who is Ishvara Parama Krishna Satchit Ananda Vigraha, the absolute truth who has a body that's all beautiful, that's eternal, full of knowledge and full of bliss, who forever in his own abodes engages in loving pastimes with eternally the highest liberated souls who have attained prema, or divine love. When Shukadev Goswami heard about Bhagavan, he became so deeply attracted that the Brahman feature of the Lord became insignificant and irrelevant to him. And there is another, there are many stories like this. The Bhagavatam describes the four Kumaras. They were also liberated souls. They had attained mukti. They had no desires. They were in Brahmananda, the ecstasy of the all-pervading oneness of everything. And at the gates of Vaikuntha, they happened to smell a breeze that carried the fragrance of tulsi leaves that were mixed with sandalwood on the feet of Lord Vishnu. And just by smelling that, their prema awakened. And they became acharyas of one of the four Vaishnav sampradayas. Param drishvani vartate. When you experience a higher taste, nobody has to tell you what's the truth. So for these great Vaishnava acharyas and those who have connected to the Vaishnava acharyas, there used to be so much argument and logic about how can you limit God by giving him a form. Logically, there's so many arguments Prabhupada is explaining here. If God is unlimited, and you're saying that giving a form to him is limiting him, well, by saying he can't have a form that's eternal, full of knowledge and full of bliss, is limiting him. Which is more unlimited? To be unlimited by having no form and no personality, or to have a form and personality that is absolutely unlimited? You don't want to limit a person's eyes, so you say he has no eyes? Is that greater? Or that that person's eyes could see everything, everywhere, at all times, past, present, and future? Which kind of eyes are more unlimited, no eyes or that eyes? But we think if God has eyes, they must be like mine. Well, you need spectacles when you're age at 60 to read the Srimad Bhagavatam. One time I was in an assembly with about 3,000 people in the audience, and I had to give a Bhagavatam class, and the lights were not good, and I asked them, this was in Bombay, I said, can you bring my glasses? So we brought a glass of water. So I said, thank you, but can you bring my glasses? So he thought I meant plural, so he brought another glass of water. Because there's glass and glasses. He realized his mistake. I asked for glasses, not glass. So he brought two and three glasses of water. I said, why do you keep giving me glasses of water? He says, because you're asking for glasses. I said, no, like this kind of... He said, those are called spectacles. In India, they don't know what glasses is, at least in some places. So now I say spectacles, and in America, people doesn't... What is a spectacle? I guess. So Krishna doesn't need glasses. He has eternal eyes that see everything everywhere, huh? And his ears. He can hear everything, every thought. And he remembers everything and every thought that you have ever had, and that all living beings, even the insects in all of their previous lives. That's unlimited. That's achintya shakti. That's inconceivable. Can you imagine? Some of us may have gone through 8,400,000 species of life several times over in this material creation. And Krishna remembers perfectly every single act, every thought, every word you have in every species of life, and he'll never forget. For everyone. Unlimited. Every germ. And compared to the demigods, we're like germs. Everything's relative. And because we don't have that power, and nobody we know have that power, we think it's impossible. Some sort of mythology. But Krishna's achintya shakti, he has inconceivable potencies. If Krishna's potencies, if Krishna's power, if Krishna's personality was subjected to what's acceptable by your relative observations, then what's the use of it being God? He could just be anybody else, just a little better. You know, some athletes could jump really high, and we can't jump so high. But because we see them jumping, we believe that they could do it. Well, we see God performing miracles everywhere. But we're not willing to appreciate. Everywhere we look is a miracle of God that's inconceivable to human conception. There's maybe 30 or 40 people in this room now. And look at every person. What a miracle. It's like these nice ladies, they're sitting next to their mother. And now they're bigger than their mother. But at one time, they were little seeds floating around in her body. I'm not going to go into any details. But she didn't know, the mother didn't know what was going on. She didn't even know the seed was there. And they're just floating around. And they're microscopic. You can't even see like this. And there's a little jiva, there's a little soul in that seed. And then it starts growing and growing, and it's not like there was an engineering master plan. You know, after so many weeks, eyes will come and nose will come and heart will be to grow. No, mother doesn't know what's going on. Father is usually always bewildered. And now she's bigger than her mother, and she's dancing and getting married and all kinds of stuff. And Craig, isn't that a miracle? How did it happen? She sees, she smells, she hears, she loves. She could create other people like that. Every human being is a miracle. Every tree, a little seed. An entire banyan tree is contained within a tiny little banyan seed. Scientists can't do it. Nobody could do it. Inconceivable potencies. How clouds are floating in the sky, and some of these clouds have millions and millions of gallons of water in it, and it's just floating. If we want to bring millions of gallons, we have to get trucks and trains and so much gasoline to move it. And here you have millions and millions of gallons in one cloud, and it's so light, it's floating in the air, and a little breeze takes it to another place. Isn't that a miracle? Inconceivable potencies. So when the Supreme Absolute Truth, who is, Krishna says in Gita, all incredible, beautiful, opulent things in this world are but a spark of my splendor. devotees said to Prabhupada, "Isn't this a beautiful sunset?" Srila Prabhupada said, "If you think the art is beautiful, you should see the artist." Sarva karana karanam. Krishna is the cause of all causes, the source of everything that exists. He is Yogeshwaram. He is the master of all perfections. Inconceivable. Janma karma chame divyam evam yoveti tatvatat yaktvate ham punar janma naiti mameti surjuna. Krishna tells in the Gita, one who understands the transcendental, infinite, inconceivable nature of my appearance and activities in this world never has to take birth in this material world, but attains my abode. So yes, the Lord is all-pervading, impersonal light. And the Lord is also the situated within our heart. And the Lord is also that all-attractive, all-beautiful source of all opulences, Krishna, the personality of Godhead. And those who seek the impersonal aspect of the Lord, their goal is mukti, total peace in a liberated state where there is no birth and no death. And those who are striving for the Paramatma realization, they come in contact with incredible supernatural powers and wisdom and knowledge. And those who seek to realize Bhagavan, the infinite nature of the love of our heart is totally awakened. And we can enter into the ecstatic pastimes forever with the all-beautiful Lord in our own eternal spiritual personal identity in this world and beyond. So hearing Srimad Bhagavatam from Vyasadeva, Shukadeva Goswami was completely attached to Krishna. And interestingly about Shukadeva Goswami, he was such a renunciate. He was totally detached from everything in this world. Whether it was winter or summer, he didn't even wear clothes. Not because he was like a rainbow kind of person. Because he just didn't think about these things. It was just completely, he was aloof to thinking about anything of this material world. You know, he didn't even think he had a body. You know, you put on clothes because you recognize you have a body to cover. He didn't even think about his body. He was totally engrossed in remembering Krishna. And yet, Shukadeva Goswami, the topmost renunciate, his ultimate object of worship were the gopis. Because of the pure, spotless love that they had for Krishna. That's the culmination of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Highest liberation. So here, Shukadeva Goswami is explaining a little bit of his own life to Parikshit Maharaj, and through Parikshit Maharaj to the whole world, to give a basis of where he got this information from and how he came to accept it. And it's very convincing. Shukadeva Goswami isn't speaking something theoretical. And he's sharing these highest revelations with all of us. So this is some explanation of today's verse and purport. And Kanta Prabhu told me that you students have many, many questions. So in honor of your inquisitive nature toward understanding the absolute truth, I ask if there are any questions. Or any discussions.
You said that the question Maharaj Pariksit asked was, what is one's duty at the time of death? And the duty is to, or in all circumstances, to remember the personality of Godhead. I know sometimes when I'm dozing off to sleep, an image of my deities will come in my head, and other times complete nonsense. I seem to have no control over that, and I think that that must, you know, how am I going to remember Krishna at the time of death, because I seem to have no control over it.
Hariro. You can only understand Krishna at the time of death by the grace of Krishna. There's no other way. It's not by your mechanical methods. Even if you know exactly what time you're going to die in the day and you have all kinds of arrangements made, still, only by the grace of Krishna can you remember. And Krishna's grace is when that's our main desire in life. Krishna reciprocates with our desire. If we express our desire by trying to remember him while we're living in a favorable way, sam siddhir hari toshanam, if we're really sincerely, honestly trying to please Krishna in our life, trying to follow Srila Prabhupada and the great saints' instructions to chant his names, to hear Srimad Bhagavatam, to respect and honor devotees, to be humble, to be respectful and forgiving, if we really try to practice these principles, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur would speak, and Prabhupada would often cite, do not try to see Krishna, but try to serve Krishna in a way that Krishna is happy to see you. And if Krishna is happy to see you, then Krishna will appear at the time of death. And he will see you, and you will see him. And that is the perfection of life. So just be sincere in trying. Ananyas chintayanto mam yejana paryupashate tesham nitya biyuktanam yogakshemam vahamyaham. If we just sincerely, honestly take shelter of Krishna in the way that we're being taught, then Krishna, whatever little we have, he preserves, and whatever we lack, he will compensate. Krishna will come to you at the time of death, if he's pleased with the sincerity of your life. Does that answer your question? Ready, well.
It seems sometimes like there is some kind of a tension or gap between the personal process to being part of a mission or organization or something. I mean, you refer to Maharaj Parikshit, and he's the emperor of the world, and he's taking, instead of taking an action maybe that considered all those who are under him and everything, he's taking that internal process. So I just wonder, and now as practitioner, it's kind of like maybe in a smaller... we're not the emperor of the world, but there is a smaller kind of more, and it's one of quantity kind of, but when we want, sometimes need to practice more the different qualities of humility or things like that, and then on the other hand, wanted the mission to be in a certain standard. It's kind of like how to balance those things, how to kind of really understand how to do this, if you understand. If I make myself clear enough.
Well, I'm sure you are, but I'm just not so clear.
Okay.
Lakshmi Moni Devi, do you understand the essence of what she's asking?
Yeah, because I feel like also sometimes that there seems to be sometimes a conflict between what you feel you need to do for your own spiritual practice and your own spiritual advancement and what your obligations are to the mission or to the greater world. So Maharaj Parikshit, he was an emperor, so he had an obligation to the world, and he left that and focused on his own mission. And Prabhupada said he could have counteracted the curse, so he could have, you know, he didn't have to go away and die in 7 days. But he chose that to focus on his own perfection rather than taking care of all the people he was supposed to take care of. So how do you balance those things? Is that correct, sir?
Mm-hmm. You are a very good translator. Thank you. Parikshit Maharaj chose, according to his own realization, what was the best way he could serve all of society and serve Krishna. If he thought that staying as a king would be a better way for him to serve, he would have somehow or other counteracted and remained as a king. But yad yad acharati sreshtas tatad eveta rojana sayat pramanam kuruste lokas tad anuvartate. That what great people do, common people follow. So his whole purpose as being a king was to rule in such a way that physically, emotionally, and ultimately spiritually, he was protecting his citizens and giving the highest example to his citizens. And to teach them this detachment from the conceptions of I and mine on the material platform. And to teach them that really the true goal of life is to take shelter of the Lord, he chose to set this example. If he stayed around and just did a good job as king, 5,000 years later, he would just be a name in a list in the Puranas as a great king. Like, there's so many names of kings. There's hundreds in the Mahabharata, Purana, Srimad Bhagavatam. There are hundreds of names of kings, and his sons were this, and his sons were this, and he did this. But the Mahapurana, the crest jewel of all Vedic literatures, the cream of all knowledge, the Srimad Bhagavatam, he provided that. Not only for his citizens, but for all time to come, even 5,000 years later, still the main source of spiritual inspiration for bhaktas. Yes, and it's growing. By Srila Prabhupada's mercy, the Srimad Bhagavatam is in practically every major language in the world, and there's millions and millions of them being read and distributed. So he knew exactly what was the best way he could serve his citizens. So in the same way, for the rest of us, obviously we're not Arjuna's grandson, we're not emperors of the planet, but in our own small way, it's important that we try to harmonize our social skills and obligations, our personal physical health matters, our domestic family matters, our sadhana, harmonize all those in such a way that how could I best serve? How could I best serve? That's the main question. With whatever I have and whoever I have and whatever time I have, how could I best serve? Parikshit Maharaj made this decision. Srila Prabhupada, to keep body and soul together, he tried in every way to keep his body healthy so that he could serve. But when he saw it wasn't Krishna's will, take me to Vrindavan. And he showed how to die perfectly. He was in Vrindavan, surrounded by hundreds and hundreds of loving disciples chanting the holy names. And up until just a couple days before, he was still giving commentaries for Srimad Bhagavatam, giving guidance. And then Hare Krishna, he showed us how to live, he showed us how to pass. So all of us, whoever we are, how could I best serve? We have to search our own hearts, and also to take guidance from those senior devotees who we trust. How could I best serve? Does that answer your question? Thank you.
Guru Maharaj, thank you very much for the class.
In that regard, Ambarish Prabhu and Swaha Devi, they have It was about 35 years ago. Srila Prabhupada gave Ambarish Prabhu the instruction to help to build this temple of the Vedic planetarium in Sri Mayapur Dham, which seemed like a very impossible thing. At that time, Mayapur was basically just agricultural fields, predominantly Muslim, a few little tiny Gaudiya Mats there. Srila Prabhupada just had a little building with a guest house. And the deities were only about this big there, right? That's all. Now you go to Mayapur, but understand, when Prabhupada gave this instruction to Ambarish Prabhu, the deities in Mayapur were just this big. There was Lord Chaitanya and Radha Madhava, brass deities. You know, smaller than what are in most people's homes these days. And that was it. And there was a thatched hut and a little buildings, a couple little buildings were made. And he said, this, build this temple. And he told the size it should be and the dimensions. And he gave different alternatives of what design it should be. And then Srila Prabhupada, Krishna took him to Goloka. And so many things have happened within the society of devotees. Wonderful things, extraordinary things, heartbreaking things. It's like creation, dissolution happening at every moment. And he never forgot the order of his guru. It's interesting. What year did Srila Prabhupada give you that instruction? And the temple began last year. So how many years was that between? 30 years. It's interesting because Srila Prabhupada got the order by his guru to take Krishna consciousness all over the world in 1922. And he finally, in 1965, he actually set out to carry it out. How many years is that? Huh? 43 years. Prabhupada never forgot the instruction he received. Ambarish Prabhu never forgot the instruction he received. And now it's actually happening. The temple is... I was walking around it. In fact, I'm proud to say I got my photograph taken standing next to Ambarish Prabhu on the top of the construction site. Remember? And His Holiness Jai Patak Maharaj, he was brought up in some, what was it, a crane? A 250-foot crane. There was like a little house, a little, like a bhajan kutir, put on this crane, and Jai Patak Maharaj went in his wheelchair, and he went, and put him down, just for the photograph. That was a supernatural, the ultimate utilization of technology. How could I best serve? You know, through thick and thin and everything, one who takes the order of the spiritual master is one's life and soul. When we really take the order of the spiritual masters, our life and soul, then Krishna empowers us to make the choices of how we could best serve. If we really have the right motive to please, then Krishna gives us, either through others or through our own intuition. And Ambarish Prabhu and Swaha Devi, incredible what they're doing. Such an example. And I can't go into details now, but how much time and energy and everything was wasted by other people's wrong decisions. And almost anybody else would have given up. But he took Prabhupada's instruction as his life and soul. And even after all that, full enthusiasm. And it's manifesting before our eyes. And next year, there'll probably be another photo. And any way we can assist, we are honored to assist. I don't know what I'm doing, but I'm so honored, whatever way we can assist. It's an offering of love. Whether our offering of love is by offering a fruit or a flower or a leaf, patram pushpam palam toyam, or whether it's building the most magnificent temple in the modern world. Whatever way we can make an offering of love, and we can all do with sincerity, it has unlimited eternal value. Yes, another question.
Maharaj, thank you for the class. You were mentioning how Krishna accepts everything we offer with love and devotion. And sometimes it's confusing that there's so many rules and regulations, like it's described that you should wake up early, 3 a.m., like that, like early, and attend, do rounds, and so on and so forth. These are prescribed so that we can progress in Krishna consciousness. But for us, like sometimes in student life, it's kind of very difficult. And then, so there is, on one side there are rules and regulations, one side there is Krishna will accept whatever you do with love and devotion. So like, it's very confusing sometimes. So like, sometimes it feels like, maybe we are using this as an excuse that, oh, I have love and devotion and Krishna will accept whatever I'm doing. So, it's very confusing sometimes. Can you give any practical suggestions?
I can try. What do you study?
Computer science.
Computer science. Believe it or not, you're not the first person I've met that studies that. Bombay is computer science loca. Our Brahmachari ashram is about 100 computer scientists. But what to speak of the congregation? The rules and regulations are necessary to cultivate that true love and devotion. Patram pushpam palam toyam yome bhakta prayachchati. Krishna says, if you offer me a leaf, a flower, fruit, or water, I will accept it if it's offered with love. So it's not just by offering a flute and a little leaf or flower. It's offering with love. It's not the flower. It's not the temple. It's the love that Krishna accepts. And these rules and regulations, ragadveshiva muktaishtu vishayanandriyaishtirai atmavashaya vishayatma prasaramarigashchati. Krishna says, one who follows these regulative principles of freedom can obtain the complete mercy of the Lord and thus become free from all the dualities and diversions of this material existence. In Princeton, I gave a lecture with Dr. Cornell West, he's a professor there, and he was talking about how this America was a spiritual wasteland that has been devastated by weapons of mass distraction. So many distractions. So these rules and regulations to, well, I rise early in the morning to chant the holy names a certain amount of times a day with quality, they help us to actually fix our mind on Krishna, to regulate our life, help us to have control over the mind, control over the senses, so that we actually can remember Krishna properly, so that we can actually develop love for Krishna. So it's not the rules and regulations themselves. We have to have the right intent in following. But that intent becomes purified. It's just like if you want to be a good computer scientist, you don't just sit home eating potato chips, watching television, with the intent of being a computer scientist. Yes? If your intent is serious, then you'll go to school. And there's a lot of rules and regulations in the school, right? You have to go to classes, you have to take exams. That's the way your intent actually can be fulfilled. So similarly, it's not just by, I love you, Krishna, as we're just doing what anybody else does in this world. The rules and regulations, it's like going to college to actually develop that love. Therefore, it is important. But it's also important that the intent, it's not the ritual itself that brings the love. We have to do it really to please our Guru and Krishna. And these rituals and these rules and regulations have tremendous potency because they attract the grace of Krishna. Does that answer your question? So try your best. Balance. Human nature is so often to be extreme. Either we get so totally absorbed in our studies that we just put aside our sadhana altogether, or we become so absorbed in our sadhana that we fail in our studies. And the key to success is balancing with sincere intelligence. Give priority time to your sadhana. Give priority time to your studies. Shouldn't be one or the other. And that's the way grihastha life is. If you think studies are bad, if you think studies are complicated, if you get married and have children and have a job, then you'll understand what's complicated. Then you have to balance all those things. And plus you're Indian, so your parents are going to probably have so many demands of you. So there's going to be many obligations that we have to our parents' health, to our children's health, to our wife's health, to our boss's health, to our employees' health. Plus we have our sadhana. Plus we have our devotional responsibilities. And we have to see the priority in every single one of those things to balance them. And if we're sincere, Krishna makes everything possible. So right now, just trying to do nicely in your school and balancing it with your devotional needs is a very preliminary challenge. But wait. Just try your best, honestly, sincerely, and Krishna will give all help, and Krishna will be pleased. You may not be able to do everything, but just try your best. Krishna will take you to the highest. Does that answer your question? Ready, well. And if you think, oh, that's difficult, then try being a Swami. Sometimes it's like being a human moving dumpster. Arriba. Any other questions? Yes, Prabhu.
I want to ask about Grihastha Ashram. Like when we enter Grihastha Ashram, in that there will be many, like, the sense enjoyment is also part of Grihastha Ashram and becomes a distraction from our absorption in spiritual life. So, how do we deal with it? And always, because it is a necessary part also, but we also have to keep the focus spiritual life. So, how do we deal with it?
Are you a Grihastha?
I'll be entering into it, so.
So you're not married?
I'm not married right now.
But you are planning to marry?
Yes.
Huh? You're in a relationship. You are speaking with realization. And is there a date when you're getting married?
I'm pursuing my PhD right now, so after I get done with my PhD.
How many years till you get your PhD?
One more year.
And then you'll graduate.
Yeah.
And then you marry. Well, I congratulate you. And I pray for you. Yeah. No, I'm not. I'm trying to encourage him in my own way. No, it's wonderful. If we put Krishna in the center of our life, Grihastha Ashram is perfect. It's the perfect vehicle for pure devotional service. So as far as your question, if we have nice association and we have nice sadhana and we're enthusiastic to serve together, then that, by putting those positive opportunities, it gives us spiritual strength for husband and wife to overcome or balance those distractions. The idle mind is the devil's workshop. If you're not swimming upstream, you're going to go downstream. So Grihastha life is where our sadhana is there, our chanting the holy names, our associating with devotees, our working, but giving sanctity to our occupation by utilizing the funds that we get, the influence that we get to enlighten people in Krishna consciousness. If we do all those things, then Grihastha life becomes Vaikuntha. Prabhupada said when a husband and wife are centered around Krishna, their relationship, then their home becomes Vaikuntha. Otherwise, deep dark well. So Grihastha life is beautiful if we just have those values that we focus on. So sense gratification is, that's our inclination. But we try to do it, and we try to do whatever we're doing in such a way that is pleasing and acceptable to Krishna. Actually, doing well in class is a great service. In Mumbai, we have over 1,000 men students in colleges who are chanting 16 rounds. They're in the colleges. And I think about 1,400 that are regularly chanting rounds. And many, several hundred ladies also. And one of the reasons so many people are becoming so attracted to Krishna consciousness in the colleges is because those students who are devotees do so well in college. By actually being an example and doing really well, in many ways, you could reach more people's hearts than being a brahmachari and going out and preaching. It's a reality, because so many people have the misconception that if you become a devotee, you become useless. Really? Have you heard that before? That you're so absorbed in God and you're so intoxicated in God that you're not going to concentrate on your studies and you're not going to be a good grihastha and you're not going to be able to excel in the competitive world. Yes? And people, you know, not everybody wants to be a renunciate. Very rarely does anyone want to be a renunciate. So most people, they fear coming too close to our movement if they think that they're going to go down in their studies and they're going to become less effective in society. But when they see students who are chanting and enthusiastic about bhakti, and they're at the top of their class, then all of those illusions are dispelled. And actually, I can say, in so many of the colleges where these students are becoming devotees, they are on the top of their class. Medical colleges, engineering colleges, science colleges, even professors, deans of students, devotees, PhDs, when they see that these people are devotees, industrialists, lawyers, Bhaktivedanta Hospital, you know, most of the senior doctors are devotees. And because of that, dozens of other doctors are becoming devotees. So by doing really well and being really responsible in your studies, and at the same time deeply adhering to the values of bhakti, it's a tremendous service. So please go to your studies and don't let me interfere by talking too much, and satisfy your professors and be happy. Hare Krishna.